In the 13th chapter of the Gospel, according to St. Luke, we have the account of Jesus healing a woman on the Sabbath and the condemnation that he receives from the authorities there for, in their perception, breaking the law. And yet Jesus demonstrates to them. He says, who amongst you wouldn't untie his ox or his mule on the Sabbath, or feed them or take care of them if they fell in a ditch and so on? Who wouldn't show concern and care even for an animal? And Jesus says, how then can it be breaking God's law to release this woman from such infirmities that she suffered from for so many years? Because those who condemn Jesus for healing on the Sabbath in effect have misunderstood the nature of the law, the purpose of the law. Yes, the law is there as an opportunity to be obedient to God, but the spirit of the law ultimately is love. This is why Jesus Christ is the fulfillment of the law, the embodiment of love himself. And so, in failing to love and to understand love, they have failed to understand what it is Jesus is doing there on the Sabbath, and how it really truly conforms to the law itself. Because Jesus, as he said, did not come to do away with the law, but to fulfill it. And Christ is the fulfillment of the law, because the spirit of the law is love. And today there are many people who continue to ask themselves, to what extent then should we as Christians be trying to keep the rules, the law of Moses? Should we avoid eating pork? Should we have our children, our male children, circumcised? And so on and so on. And of course the answer is no. We only need to look at the book of Acts in the New Testament to see that the apostles dealt with this very early on in the life of the church. This is an issue that was dealt with 2,000 years ago. And yet there are heretical groups that are still to this day springing up, trying to confuse people. Not deliberately, I'm sure. I'm sure their intentions are good in themselves. They believe they are trying to be obedient to God, but it sows confusion amongst people. People who then start picking and choosing which of the laws of Moses they should keep. And amongst all of these, of course, the issue of the Sabbath itself continues to be a problem for some people, particularly Seventh-day Adventists and other heretical groups such as these. Should Christians, they say, not keep the Sabbath and meet and worship on Saturday, the Sabbath, according to the old Jewish law, or as Christians have always done from the very beginning, meet on Sunday, which is the day of resurrection? And this is important for us to remember. From the very beginning, Christians met and worshipped God on a Sunday. It was the day of resurrection. But first let us think a little about the Sabbath and the nature of the Sabbath, because it gives us an understanding of why Christians see Sunday as so important. In the beginning, in the book of Genesis, for example, God blessed the Sabbath day. Because, of course, it was the day on which God rested. It was the seventh day. For 6 days God labored. He created the world. And he blessed it, a special, the seventh day of rest, when he took rest from his labors and he saw all that he had done was good. 6 days God created the world. And everything in it was brought into being during those 6 days. When God created something from nothing, that wasn't the day that God said, this is the day to be separate and blessed. When God created man, when he created the skies, the stars, the sun and the moon, these weren't the days that he said, let this day be special and different. It was the day on which he rested from his labors. Because on the seventh day, God transcended the things of the world. For 6 days God created everything that is of the world and the world itself. But on the seventh day, he transcended the visible to return to the heights of his own place. And then he has invited humanity to enter into this rest, this ascension to the things beyond the world, to enter into his rest and ascend in prayer to God, to enter this divine activity that we call rest. But it is a spiritual work, of course. And this is really to turn our whole being away from the world. This day marks and acknowledges that we are to meditate, and we use that word advisably, meditate on the teaching of the Holy Spirit, that the whole of our lives may be ordered according to the guidance of the Holy Spirit. But the eighth day, the new day of eternity, the new day, the eighth day, fulfills the seventh, fulfills it. Even as Christ fulfilled the law, the seventh day of the Sabbath is fulfilled by the new day of Sunday. It is completed. The seventh day, yes, is blessed, and it is the Sabbath. But the new day is the day of resurrection. There, in the Old Testament, like the year of Jubilee, which was not counted by Moses as being amongst the others numerically. It wasn't just an additional year. But the year of Jubilee, the eighth year in this sense, in which all is forgiven amongst men, is a sign of the eighth day to come. In Leviticus, Moses calls the eighth day the final solemn assembly. We find that in Leviticus, the completion, the fulfillment of all other feasts, the Feast of Trumpets. Just as the law leads to Christ, the seventh day leads to the eighth day, the day on which Christ was resurrected. Sunday is not just the eighth day numerically, as the year of Jubilee and so on was not, but it is spiritually the first of all days. It becomes the first of all days, the new day. Just as Christ in his resurrection is the first fruit of the resurrection of all men, so Sunday, the new day, the Lord's day, is this sign, the new eighth day of eternity. And so this new day, Sunday, the Lord's day, was exalted by all Christians above all others from the very beginning. Because it is not just a festival that we celebrate once a year. It is every week. Every week, Sunday comes to us, sanctifying the whole of the year, the whole of time. As Isaiah says, a year acceptable to the Lord, made acceptable and sanctified by that eighth day, that new day, Sunday. So let us strive to attend God's temple on this holy day. We all know the demons will tempt us. The demons will stir up all kinds of thoughts and feelings to prevent us from attending church, to attempt us to not participate in this holy festival on the new day. The demons will say to us, "Oh, but it is too far to travel. Think of my poor children. How can they possibly fast? How can they go so many hours I've worked so hard all through the week. The weather has turned cold. The heating isn't good in church. I have to stand too long in church. I don't like so-and-so. The singing isn't the way I like it. And so on and so on. The demons will tempt us to give in to all kinds of petty, silly thoughts, to keep us from Christ, to keep us from his life-giving mysteries. Let us remember St. Thomas. St. Thomas lost faith in absence. When Christ appeared to the other apostles, Thomas was not there. And when they told him of the Christ who was resurrected, he doubted. He doubted because he had been absent. And he found Christ and believed once he returned. He joined the apostles and saw Christ on that new Sunday. We are called to neither follow the world nor the promptings and temptations of the demons. We are to follow the saints to Christ, and let us follow them to church.